Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, the host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Today, tantric sexuality, the tantra vision, we can sometimes say high sex. And I'm wondering if any of you have wondered, maybe while making love or just afterwards, isn't there more to sex than this? Have you ever felt incomplete during sex because your partner has already, shall we say, landed before you even have had a chance to take off? Have you ever felt, oh, so bored with sex in a long-term relationship and found yourself wanting and wishing that you could recapture the passion that used to make sex between you so exciting? And have you ever wished to be touched at, say, the core of your being, yet somehow you feel afraid to open yourself up and be vulnerable? So if you've answered yes to any of these questions, keep on listening, because you do sense intuitively the value of peak experiences in lovemaking. And here to deal with these questions is Dr. Ava Cadell, who has seen thousands of people over the years, and they've come to her because they want more out of their sex lives. And before we allow and encourage, and I'm excited to have Ava Cadell speak, I'm wondering, Brian, if you would introduce Ava officially.
Yes. Hello, everyone. This is Brian Brewer, Diana's co-host for today. And we have with us today Dr. Ava Cadell, who is a world-renowned expert in sex. That's the easiest way to say it. She's an accomplished author of 7 books, has made many, many media appearances, has founded Loveology University. That's at loveologyuniversity.com. And is just generally a very knowledgeable person about all aspects of sex. Welcome, Dr. Cadell.
Welcome. Ava,
happy
so
birthday,
nice to
Diana.
Have you. What is it?
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it is my birthday, and I'm counting my blessings.
You're going to have a tantric birthday.
I'm going to have a tantric birthday, yes.
What would that look like, Ava?
Well, very exciting and drawn out and just filled with love and lust and laughter and licks and all kinds of yummy things.
Oh, my goodness, I'm getting excited just thinking about it. Yes, I plan to do that. Thank you very much, Ava. And for those of you who haven't heard Ava on the show before, because she's been a guest, maybe this is your 4th or 5th time, but Ava and I have been friends for years. And when I lived in Los Angeles, we saw more of each other, and I miss that, Ava. We used to have some fabulous lunches at the Beverly Hills Hotel out in that lovely courtyard. And Ava's just a dear, dear, generous friend, remembered my birthday with a lovely, funny card and a gift, and I want to thank you publicly for that.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, Ava, she is an expert on so many things, but tantra, I'm wondering if you describe for us what it is and also what it is not.
Okay, well, why don't we start with what it is not, because a lot of people are really unclear about it. And it is not a religion. It is not a sexual cult. It's not a spiritual philosophy. It's definitely not exhibitionism or swinging or sex therapy. So, tantra is an ancient Hindu Sanskrit word that means to weave energy, specifically yin, which is female, and yang, which is male, energy between two lovers. And this energy includes our thoughts, our feelings, our physical, and our sexual actions. So tantra is basically a way of making love, a way of connecting through mind, body, spirit.
And it can be so very healing for couples that have had their problems, and because it does have this spiritual component to it.
Yeah, it can actually break down defensive walls and improve communication and touch. Because in Tantra, there's a lot of non-sexual touching which can be extremely healing. You know, I'll give you an example. I had a woman in my office, a couple, and the woman had breast cancer. And so she felt completely and utterly broken.
Yes.
And her husband had no idea what to do, what to say, because he felt helpless, as so many men do. And I asked him simply to touch her breast on the outside of her clothing very gently with his hand and to eye gaze at her, and then for them to simply synchronize their breathing. And she just started crying and connecting with him on such a beautiful, intimate level, because he was accepting her and he was touching her, and it was an incredibly healing connection that neither one of them had ever done before. And so that was a breakthrough for them, you know, for their relationship. So that's just a very quick example of how a tantric touch can heal and help.
And also in cases where there's vaginismus, where the vaginal opening, as you know, Ava, and probably Brian knows too, contracts so much that penetration is not possible. And I had a client say that after her lover and she had, I had helped them, of course it's all talk therapy, and then they go home and try this, where he was able to give her a vaginal massage, so taking his fingers around her opening and then gently seeing if he could probe into with plenty of lubrication. And she said, when she got better and was healed, she said, I realized how much pleasure I had been denying myself and how my genitals were only just then awakening after a long period of, I think she said, insensitivity. And she knew that the love and the gentle caresses from her patient partner really, really did a lot toward healing.
Yeah, and you know, it's all about respect and asking permission. And another thing I love about Tantra is that they have completely different words for different parts of the body. So the vagina is called yoni, which means sacred space, which is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
The penis is called a lingam, which means wand of light. So you put the wand of light into the sacred space, which is so much more poetic than putting a dick in a pussy.
Yes, it certainly is.
What do you think, Ryan?
Much more poetic.
Yes.
But Ava, I have a question for you, and for... And I think some of our listeners may be wondering about this. And before I get to the question, let me just remind listeners that we would love to get your phone calls with any questions you have for Dr. Ava Cadell today on Tantric Sex. And our number is 1-888-874-4888. I'll say it again, 888-874-4888. So please give us a call. But here's my question, Ava. Some of the descriptions that you've given so far about tantric sex are interesting, but how would you describe the main difference between what most Westerners today, you know, what our experience of sex is? You know, it just happens 10 or 15 minutes late at night or something. How does tantric sex look different? How would it feel different?
Well, tantric sex feels different because it's very, very respectful, as I said, and it's about asking permission and eye gazing. There are six elements to Tantra, and one of them, you know, is breath, so a lot of it is breathing, and one of them is sound, so a lot of it is releasing different sounds, and then there's movement, and there's intention, there's attention, there's muscle lock, so there's a lot more intricacies than just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And it's definitely about enjoying the journey just as much, if not more, than the destination. So what Tantra looks like is that it empowers and fulfills women's sensual needs, and for men, it can open up a whole new world to intimacy and give them the tools to become multi-orgasmic, in other words, separate orgasm from ejaculation. So that's, you know, that makes it very different to your quickies.
Right.
And I think there's I think Tantra also teaches that your sexual relationship should be filled and overflowing with pleasure and joy, and relax and have fun and bring the laughter and the playfulness to your sexual interaction. Playfulness. Because you're more focused on the journey, not just the destination, you can be more playful, and that's really key to really hot relationships, I think, the playfulness.
Oh, definitely. And then the other thing is, as I mentioned earlier, it's yin and yang energy weaving, but there is no power struggle, and I love that. And so it's blending. It's like white and dark chocolate blending. You're blending your masculine and your feminine energy together. Nobody's in control. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just blending together and becoming two hearts becoming one.
Mm-hmm. And
that's not to say that it isn't erotic, because it is. I mean,
yes.
There's plenty of oral sex and intercourse and anal sex and all kinds of wonderful things, but the names are different. You know, oral sex is called honoring your lover. That means going down on them, which is really pretty.
Yes.
The anus is called the rosebud. The clitoris is called the pearl. So there are all these lovely, you know, descriptive words that just make it sound more romantic.
And also, how about this? In tantric lovemaking, great emphasis is placed on a woman's natural right to reach her peak of sexual ecstasy. She's often worshipped as a goddess, if all's going well.
Well, yeah, she is. I mean, Tantra comes from, you know, the ancient Indian Sanskrit culture, where Shakti was the Hindu goddess deity that represents the creative force for Kundalini energy. And then Shiva is the ancient male god deity that represents the consciousness for grounded energy. So it's definitely about, you know, gods and goddesses. But a lot of people get turned off by the word god and goddess because they think it has a religious connotation.
Yeah, say a little more about that and how people should perhaps reframe it if they're stuck with that.
Well, you don't have to, you know, honor the god or the goddess in your lover. I mean, if you're comfortable with it, then do it. But I teach a lot of men and women about tantric sex, and I don't use that kind of vocabulary because I want to make them feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I just use, you know, other verbiage. I use the yin and the yang and the sexual energy and even the word chakra. Chakra means energy wheels, and, you know, we have seven main energy centers in our body, but some people get turned off by that because they can't see them. They may feel them, but because it's not tangible, they don't want to go there. So a lot of people are only interested in what is 100% tangible or has scientific evidence or medical evidence, you know, as far as Tantra is concerned. And so the nice thing is that we can please those people too. There's just, Tantra is an endless topic of love and lust, and we can go anywhere with it. And that's why I actually just created 52 tips to tantric sex in a deck of playing cards.
And that's going to be part. That's going to be part of your. You have two books coming out, and as I understand it, one of them is called or has to do with sex games.
Yes, I have a book for Penguin Publishing coming out before the end of the year on sex games for couples. But there's not much tantra in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I am coming out with my own line of tantric sex toys. And so the playing cards will be, you know, they'll be complementing all the toys that I come out with.
Give us a preview, would you, Ava?
Sure. Well, for example, the secret to moving sexual energy is to move your hand up to the center of your lover's body and place it over their heart while you are caressing or honoring their lingam or their yoni, which means mm-hmm. their penis or their vagina with the other hand. So that's the secret to moving sexual energy. It's the secret to a tantric blowjob, if you will. It's simple yet very, very effective.
Because tantric sex is so much about energy, so...
It is. It mm-hmm. is. It's simply placing your hand on your lover's heart while you kiss them, while you go down on them, while you have intercourse with them. It just creates a whole new realm. I mean, you know, you'll just feel so much more connected.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us another card or two?
Sure. The Venus Butterfly.
The Venus Butterfly is a very famous
tantric technique, over 5,000 years old. And this is a way to give a woman an internal and an external orgasm simultaneously. So this is what you have to do. You have to orally stimulate her pearl. What is the pearl, Brian?
The clitoris.
Very good.
He pays attention.
Very good. Until your lover is on the verge of reaching her orgasm. And then you have to find her goddess spot, and you stimulate it simultaneously until she has an internal and an external orgasm known as the ancient Venus butterfly technique. But I'm sure that Dr. Diana and Brian can tell the listeners how to find that elusive goddess spot, right?
I think so.
Yeah, well,
see if you guys can do it from a male and female perspective.
Yeah, I'd be glad to talk about it,
Ava. Please,
and
I
also really like the way you've renamed it Goddess Spot, because, you know, most people know it as the G spot. And rather than naming it after some European physician, let's name it after the people who have it. Those are the goddesses.
That's right.
Very nice.
That's
I
a
like
great
that.
Reframe
so
of that
then,
name.
How would you find it? How would you tell people to find their lovers?
Well, by inserting one or two fingers in the woman's yoni.
Nice.
And feeling upward toward, you know, up towards her bladder or up towards her main part of her body. And it's in my experience, it's a kind of a spongy tissue, kind of hard, a little bit different than the soft lining of the vaginal walls. And it's, that's where you find it. It's, you know, probably, you know, about 2 or 3 inches inside and on the upper side of the vaginal wall.
And it might even feel, in some women, a little corrugated. It is a little different,
right,
as Brian describes it. And it can be the size of a dime, and then with stimulation, it can grow to the size of a quarter. And there's some research, and in fact, Dr. Erwin Goldstein presented at our recent Quad S conference, Scientific Society for Study of Sexuality in San Francisco, some animated anatomical kinds of drawings. And the G-spot, or the, I agree with you, Brian, the goddess spot,
right.
may be the root of the clitoris, because there are all these parts, just as the penis isn't just the tip of the penis, goes back, all the way back, and the same for the clitoris. And they have very analogous tissues, because we all start out similarly.
Yes, in fact, if I recall correctly, Diana, the Dr. Goldstein referred to the material, you know, the part that's known as the G-spot, as it was related to what he called a female prostate.
Yeah, do talk about that, because you described this to some mutual friends who hadn't been to the conference, and I thought you did it very well. Can you, the female prostate, as Dr. Goldstein said?
Well, and he recounted some research that he had done, where they had done biopsies of male prostate and this analogous organ in the female, where the G-spot is located. And they sent the tissue samples to a histologist, who couldn't tell the difference between the tissues were the same. They were identical
right.
from a cellular point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an analogous, structure in the female to the male's prostate. And it's also, there's still more study that needs to be done, but it seems to be closely associated with female ejaculation.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because a lot of women can ejaculate, and by the way, in Tantra, we call ejaculation Amrita, A-M-R-I-T-A, mm-hmm. which means nectar of the gods.
Oh, again poetic.
Very poetic.
Boy, and these ancient Indians, certainly.
They're very sexy people.
Sexy
very
people.
Sexy.
Sexy
Maybe that
people.
Accounts for why there's so many of them.
You know, I remember my first time in India. I was very young. It was in the late 60s. And I remember hearing, and of course that was a long way away from going to graduate school and becoming a sex therapist, but I remember hearing that in those days they would go out to the villages and with sound trucks transistor radios, which were offered as prizes if they could go on birth control. And the birth control then was moving beads around. The woman would put a necklace around her neck, and then she was supposed to abstain from intercourse during the red period. And this would be the time that she would be most fertile with ovulating. And I remember hearing one story where the woman would come back, and she had considered it rather magical because she thought just by wearing the necklace, it would keep her from getting pregnant, and she was indeed pregnant again. But the point I wanted to make here was that there was so much poverty, and to make love, to have sex, was one form of pleasure, and it didn't cost anything. So it was very hard to re-educate these Indians in that time.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was fun and it was pleasurable. And
well, sex still is, I think the ultimate high that really does make you forget about all of your problems. It really is, it's healing, it's spiritual, it's recreational, it's
mm-hmm.
fun, it's playful, it's exciting, it's erotic, it's beautiful. It's all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've always said that I think sex is one of the greatest gifts that we have to share with somebody who is worthy of it. And so I get very upset with all of these organizations that try to restrain people's sexuality and make them feel guilty and ashamed. And that's what we
yeah.
do. That's why we do what we do. To help people overcome those negative feelings and embrace the positive ones.
And part of the positive ones would be the joy of sexual sharing, as you've described it. And when I think when mutual reverence is there, there are no sexual boundaries or rules except for those decided upon by the two individuals concerned. So they can easily then find ways to play with each other, to stimulate each other. And it's so true. Sexual tension just dissolves, or any other kind of tension, when you're able to make love in this kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, we just read recently, Diana, about the 10 health benefits of having sex. So it's got lots of benefits. There's no question about it.
Lots and lots of benefits, and there was even something more in addition to the 10 health benefits. Do you have that in front of you, Brian, the 10 benefits?
Get it in a moment, yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll circle back to that eventually, but there's...
So do you guys remember the 6 elements of Tantra?
Yes, and I don't know... I sent you an email. I think I know you're in the process of doing a lot of things, Ava, so you may not have received the email, but it's right off of your website, the 6 essential tantric elements.
Oh, good. They're right there. Good.
Yeah.
Well, I think that would be interesting to just take each one of those in turn and talk about them as they relate to tantra.
I agree.
So
agree. Yeah, well, go ahead,
okay,
Ryan.
So the first one is breath.
Yes.
Yes, and, you know, we all know that breath is the essence of life. But how would you use it in tantric sex? That's what people want to know. How would you use it with your partner?
A man, and I'd like Brian to describe this, please, uses it in particular to control his, he might have an orgasm, but not an ejaculation.
Yes, so because he might the faster use the that. Breath flows, the faster the ejaculation for men. So that's very true, mm-hmm. by slowing down your breath. And maybe, Brian, you could tell men, because it sounds, you know, almost simplistic, but it takes a little bit of practice, does it not?
It does, and it just takes paying attention is the main thing.
Mm. And attention is one of the six elements.
One of the six elements,
yeah.
Yes. They're, they're all interrelated. There's no question about that.
They are. Mm-hmm. They are.
But some people think that tantric breathing is something very special or, that it takes years to learn. That's not my experience. The basic two elements for me have been to learn to do belly breathing so that I can control my breath with my diaphragm rather than my chest muscles, and can take deeper breaths and deeper exhalations that way and to slow things down. And the second part is to use my breath in connection with visualization techniques so I can visualize the energy moving through different parts of my body and then out and back between my partner and myself.
That's very good, yep. Very good. And it all begins with abdominal breathing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people breathe inside out. So the best way to identify that you're breathing properly is to place one hand gently on your lower abdomen and then focus on the movement of your stomach as you breathe. So that when you breathe in, your stomach is supposed to be sticking out.
Correct.
And when you breathe out, that's when your stomach concaves and goes in. So you need to practice that first, you know, to reprogram your incorrect breathing.
And it's actually just a question of relearning, because if you look at an infant lying on its back when it's asleep or breathing, that's the way an infant breathes with the abdominal muscles.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So that's a quickie lesson in tantric breath. And then the next element is tantric movement. So how does tantric movement differ from regular movement or touch?
Well one of the aspects of tantric sex involves quiet, almost motionless, well, shall we say, spiritualized intercourse with orgasm but without ejaculation every time.
Mm-hmm.
But just,
exactly.
So really being, less is more. So perhaps the penis could be inside the vagina but kind of still.
Yeah, you can definitely do that. And also tantric massage is a great example of tantric movement. They're giving each other a tantric massage using all five senses, heightening all five senses. And again, not worrying about having the happy ending, but really focusing on the sense of touching each other. Not only using your hands, but using your breath, using your hair, using your body to massage your lover's body. So, for example, a great birthday present for Dr. Diana would be if your lover puts massage oil all over his body and then climbs on top of you and gently moves his body from side to side and up and down all over your body.
Oh, that's
sounds like a new way to do body surfing.
That's another way of describing it, yeah.
On that high sex note, it's just lovely. We need to go to our half-hour break, so let's do it.
Progressive. progressive radio network celebrating 5 years of independent news.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Hi, this is Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off! I said not to play it!
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny. That's not funny!
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rood, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, this is Eric Ofner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz. Every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. We're talking with Dr. Ava Cadell, and we last left off with one of the six essential tantric elements, movement. But I wanted to say about that one of the more popular exercises we give with cognitive behavioral therapy as sex therapists is to send the couple home with sensate focus homework, where it's essentially erotic massage, and where they take turns being the giver and the receiver, and this should go on for at least 15 or 20 minutes, taking turns. And I think that a lot of people aren't aware that there are all these erotic possibilities from the top of the head to the tip of the toes, with all kinds of touch, and a lot of people simply get stuck between the legs and they don't explore these other sensual erotic parts of the body. Dr. Ava?
Yes, and they don't tell their partner where and how they want to be touched, which brings us to the third element of Tantra, which is sound. A lot of people just hope that their partner can read their mind, and you know, with the sensate focus, some couples will work with their hands where the receiver of the pleasure, you know, puts their hand over the giver and shows them what to do, because, you know, it's one way to communicate where they want to be touched and how they want to be touched. But I think that if you can release sounds, especially during lovemaking, it releases sexual energy.
Yeah.
And you get to express yourself through the noises of pleasure that let your lover know that you're having a fantastic time.
And it also can increase arousal, because with the sounds, you're putting more oxygen through your body. You're oxygenating the body, which can increase the arousal.
That's right. But people are very inhibited about making sounds. And I often say, you know, having sex in silence is like watching a movie on mute. You're missing out on 20% of pleasure.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I have even suggested to certain clients who are maybe more shy and quiet in general that to kind of fake it till you make it, to actually consciously make more sound during sex and see if that helps with the arousal and maybe even with a more intense orgasm when it comes, if you're
mm-hmm,
making more
mm-hmm.
sound.
Now, what do you think, Brian, about noise during sex? Is that a turn on or a turn off for you?
Well, I have several thoughts about it. Just to follow up on what Diana mentioned about fake it till you make it, in my experience, sometimes sort of forcing pleasurable sounds when I'm maybe not feeling so much pleasure can actually increase the level of pleasure. There's a feedback loop in my experience between vocalization and the actual experience of sexual pleasure in the body. And either one can start the other, is what
mm-hmm.
I've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not faking. We're not talking about, like, faking sound.
No, not really. No, that's
yeah,
that's
because
a,
that can be a turn off.
Yeah,
no,
I'm talking more about sort of jump-starting it with either having the physical pleasure trigger the sound, or the sounds can trigger the physical pleasure, is my experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find it exciting to have a woman who directs you in bed? Or
absolutely.
You...
Absolutely,
you
yes.
Good, good. I thought you might say that. And a lot of men complain that women don't direct them enough, and they don't know exactly what she likes and how to bring them to orgasm. And then there are other guys who get quite offended. So, you know, a lot of women are really confused about just how to communicate in bed.
Well, I can understand how some guys might, it can be perceived as a threat to their ego or their masculinity if they feel like they have to have some guidance about it. But gosh, there's no substitute for getting direct feedback about what's working or what's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can communicate it in a very positive way.
Absolutely.
You know, instead of saying you're doing that wrong, you can say it really turns me on when you do this or that. So.
Exactly. Positive feedback works wonders.
It does. We all love to be praised.
And if you're not able to express some of this, it's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues. I mean, we're also a little bit different, and particularly women. Women who are premenopausal, depending upon what time of the month it is, they may like breast stimulation more at certain times of the month than at other times, just to give one example. So I think, you know, so often couples really need help with communication and not being shy about it. Sometimes starting, as you said, Ava, with moving the hand, but then putting words to sexual desires and needs. And this is why one reason that sometimes older women are better lovers, because they're more assertive. They are more clear about what they want. They know their bodies better. They know what they want, and they can verbalize it.
Absolutely. And with age, one sheds their inhibitions.
Exactly.
You know, you do become more confident because you're wiser, you're smarter, and you love and accept who you are. You better, anyway.
And here today, on my birthday, I'm doing it all.
Yes, but are you doing your PC muscle exercises as you're doing this show? That's what I want to know.
Well, not actively, but now that you've reminded me, I will.
Is the next element of Tantra.
Well, before we move on, I have a couple more comments about sound.
If
take a moment. One is that playing music, it can be a definite enhancement to lovemaking. Any kind of, and especially, you know, when you slow down and do more tantric lovemaking, creating a musical environment that's compatible with both partners and with both partners' desire is a huge enhancement, in my experience.
Oh, absolutely. And finding out what kind of music turns your partner on. So, you know, you don't play heavy metal if they like classical. So, yeah, there's no doubt that music adds ambience. But you can still add those sounds of oohs and ahs and mms as well.
Oh, yes.
Right?
In fact, they can be enhanced by the music.
No, music is good.
There was even some recent research that showed that playing music that you were familiar with, that you liked, did a whole lot to help with relaxation. And we all know that we have much better sex when we're more relaxed, and that's why getting a massage before lovemaking can do a lot with the right musical accompaniment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, music is so important. I mean, music can actually heal, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many different sounds. And we're all so different. Everybody has a different interpretation of what relaxes them, what they want to hear, that turns them on, what makes them laugh, and so forth. And so this is a great opportunity to communicate with your partner and find out what they want to hear.
Yeah.
You might want to hear one thing for foreplay and something completely different once you're really, really going at it and having intense tantric sex.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, so what music do you like?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
It varies. Sometimes I like classical music, but here we've got something called soundscapes, and it's kind of new age, but it's very nice, and often that's very good. And then maybe once in the middle of lovemaking, it might switch to some rock and roll, which kind of goes with the thrusting and the higher energy.
Nice. Okay. And I like Andrea Bocelli. Whenever I hear him, I just get moist. What can I tell you?
Well, I hope your husband knows this, Ava.
You know what? He doesn't like the music.
Oh.
So I just have to use it for my own solo pleasuring. He does not like Andrea Bocelli.
You know, I like him, too. What a gorgeous voice he has.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and it's so soulful. And
oh, it's so emotional.
And emotional.
It keeps going, yes.
Yes. I mean, maybe because he's blind, too.
Well, maybe.
That he has more, that he sings. I mean, his voice is just exquisite.
Yeah.
Okay,
really
girls, let's move on.
All right, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, we're getting carried away. So let's talk about the tantric muscle lock, which is also known as bandhas, B-A-N-D-H-A-S.
Kegels.
Or Kegels for women,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
But also for men.
For men, yeah, or the PC muscle or the pubococcygeus muscles.
And
what do you call them, Brian?
The PC muscle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to call them the love muscle sometimes, too.
Mm-hmm. Or the sex muscle.
Yeah, that'll do it.
First people
have to identify them. What do you think is the best way, Brian, for a guy to identify this muscle?
Well, the one of the ways that I learned to identify it was when I really had to urinate would be to start urinating and then stop it. And that's mm-hmm. that muscle is the PC muscle.
Mm-hmm. And same for a woman too.
So you like the peeing exercise. Now what if you don't need to pee?
Well, at some point you will.
Well, my favorite way of identifying the muscle is by using a hand mirror.
Uh-huh.
So for women, I think women should always look at their vulvas and admire them. But if you get a hand mirror and you put your finger inside the yoni and then squeeze the muscle, you can feel the squeezing around your finger and you can actually watch it contracting in the mirror, which I think is very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only exciting, but it really is educational, too. So many women haven't really done that kind of exploration, taking that mirror. Mm-hmm. I can remember having a pelvic in a gynecologist's office years ago, and I asked when he was putting the speculum in, I wanted to see my cervix. So I asked him for a mirror, and he was a little surprised. I said, no, I want to see it.
I bet you made his day.
No doubt. I think, you know, just the fact, the openness, so to speak.
But, yeah, and the other thing that can help with the muscles is actually something as simple as pelvic rocking motions.
Yes.
They can help to relax those muscles. They can help you to become aware of them and loosen the muscles up between the sacrum and the hip bones and release sexual energy. So a little pelvis rocking is good.
So how would you do that, Ava? I mean, can you just describe it a little bit more than just the rocking
part? Well, for example, let's imagine that your lover is honoring your pearl. That means he's giving you oral sex. And to let him know that you're having a wonderful time, you are rocking your pelvis towards him.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing rocking motions. And what that will do is it'll release your sexual energy. It'll make him really feel like he is doing a wonderful job. And you're surrendering to the pleasure, you know, of sexuality. You're surrendering yourself to your partner. So you can combine pelvic rocking with lovemaking. And then another way to do it when you're having actual sexual intercourse, which, by the way, is called Maithuna, Maithuna in Tantra. So during Maithuna, you contract and you hold your PC, your Kegel muscles, to prolong lovemaking. So you both will contract those muscles. So there's lots of different ways that you can incorporate these muscles into intensifying and prolonging the art of lovemaking.
And there's a way that a particularly enjoyable practice is for you to relax your PC muscles when you thrust together and then tighten your PC muscles when you separate. And so this will increase the feeling of suction during intercourse, and it can be very arousing for both.
Mm-hmm. And practice doing your Kegels every day. I definitely think that we should all do them at least 3 times a day, 20 reps, because it will help us as we get older. It'll help us avoid incontinence. It'll help to keep the woman's yoni nice and tight.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll help a man with his endurance.
Exactly. The history of the Kegels, actually I read that it's pronounced Kegels. I read that. K-A-Y-G-U-L is the phonetic. And it was discovered, just the history I think is interesting for people, it was discovered in the West during the 1940s by Arnold Kegel, who, a gynecologist.
And man, of course.
And man. Yeah. Yep. And it helped many women control their bladders, as you've just described, Ava, and ease childbirth. But then later, women began to use these exercises to increase their sexual desire and intensify their orgasms, or even become multi-orgasmic. And so it's a very good thing. I remember after giving birth to my first child, 1976 this would be, one of my girlfriends had also given birth to a child, and she had little post-its all around her home, and they all said Kegels. It would be reminders for her to do Kegels, because it is also a very good way to get your vagina back in shape after giving vaginal birth.
Yeah, and nobody will know that you're doing them as long as you don't have a mirror there, you know, and you're not watching yourself do them. But you can do them while you're driving, while you're on the phone, typing, shopping, anything.
I often suggest to my female clients that they do it when they're at a red light. It's like the red light is a behavioral reminder that they can probably do, depending on how long the light lasts, maybe 10 contractions. Hold, like you're holding the PC muscles, like you're holding urine back, and then release, hold, release, hold, release. And And, you know, some women can actually feel some arousal as they do that. Now, if they're driving seriously, that may not be the best thing.
It's true, but that is a very good exercise. The red light PC exercise, very good.
Mm-hmm. So, should we go on?
Now, yeah, the next element is called intention.
Exactly, intention.
And where your intention goes, that's where your energy flows.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, put your hand on your lover's heart chakra, maintain mm-hmm. eye contact, and verbalize your intention of how you propose to create a deeper heart connection.
Mm-hmm.
What is your intention for your relationship? And an exercise I like to do with my couples is I have them stand up and face each other mm-hmm. and draw a big circle around them or a bubble, and it's called the intention bubble mm. or intention circle. And I have them throwing out intentions that are not serving them well in their relationship mm-hmm. and then bringing in intentions that will enrich their relationship. So perhaps they can throw out anger or jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps
mm-hmm.
they can bring in more romance, more communication. So that's the intention. That's an example of an intention exercise. But just making love with the intention of enjoying the journey and heightening all of your senses is going to increase intimacy.
It's apt to, very much, because when you do, I like your idea. I may borrow that from you, the draw an intention bubble mm-hmm. around you. Because if you do this in the spirit of love and mutual pleasure, the merging and the union, and realizing that there is a potential for higher spiritual sexual experience, all of that's so good and so positive. And,
it is.
Yeah.
What do you think, Brian? Would you be intimidated by creating an intention bubble with your partner?
Not at all. No.
Oh, good. So what do you think what would it be a great intention to bring in to your relationship to enrich it even more?
Well, I think I have two levels of responses to that question. One would be just any kind of intention for direct arousal or experience, or you know, let's love each other more, let's experience more joy, let's touch each other more carefully and slowly, or you know, whatever speaks to the couple at the moment in terms of mm-hmm. what they want to engender. There's also another level that I think this could be taken to, and that's to use the power of the sexual energy in the union to energize intentions about the outward world. You know, it's more like sex magic. I don't know if you're familiar with, I read a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a very intentional kind of way of using sexual energy.
Brian, say more about that.
Well, when a couple are able to generate all this, you know, exciting erotic energy, it's got a lot of power. And
mm-hmm.
and most times it just stays within the couple, and it's, you know, it's certainly enjoyable and can be very beneficial. But there's also the possibility of using that power, that energy, to sort of attach it to desires that you might have for something else in your life, something outward, you know, some physical manifestation. It's just using energy to create, you know, to manifest what one wants in one's life.
It's just perhaps something as simple as, because, oh, what the heck, I'll self-disclose a little, feeling so happy, feeling so sexually satisfied, and then that spills over to added confidence, and even added confidence as a therapist in terms of the observations and interventions I make.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, intention can be used in any capacity to improve one's life. It doesn't only have to be, you know, for lovemaking.
Right.
Yeah. No, the intention is you can even have an intention to manifest something for someone else, and that's very powerful.
Right.
Yes, it is. Yes.
So the last element of Tantra is attention.
Yes.
And that's about being 100% present for your partner. And my favorite exercise that I do with couples is that I tell them to look into each other's eyes and take turns asking, may I look into your soul by looking into your eyes?
Mm. Beautiful.
And then if permission is granted, then you tell your lover everything that you see in his or her soul. It's a beautiful, beautiful exercise.
I like that.
Breaks down a lot of walls and really helps to bond two people on a mind, body, soul basis. It's just fantastic. So if you haven't tried it, I do recommend it.
It can be even called soul gazing.
Mm-hmm.
I get some of my couples, even in my office, I mean, I send them home with sexual assignments, but in the office where they sit about 2 feet away from each other, and they look deeply into the other's eyes. And for about 2 minutes, and then talk about what you saw. Now,
right.
Some couples, it's really hard for them to do this.
I was just going to say, if you don't want to give your lover permission, then don't. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let them know, I'm not ready. I feel too vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this. And that's okay. Don't look at that as rejection. Just say thank you, you know, for being so honest and go on to something else. So not everybody is ready to allow another person to see deep into their soul.
That's true. It takes confidence, self-confidence. You used a word before, Ava, surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Sexually surrendering is absolutely key, and people often aren't ready for that. They're too defended. They need to stay in control. And
right.
Sometimes that's from having come out of, you know, very traumatic backgrounds where the need is to be in control. So we are almost out of time.
I also like to, we go, I would like to remind listeners that you can find out a lot more about Dr. Cadell and her programs and activities at loveologyuniversity.com.
Or even DrAvaCadell.com.
Right.
It's just AvaCadell.com. AvaCadell.
Thank you, Ava.
Thank you, guys.
I know that you have a stressful day going on in Los Angeles, and so we're so appreciative that you took this hour out to enlighten.
Oh, my pleasure.
Enlighten our listeners, because you are an expert on tantric sexuality.
And Diana, we're so grateful that you took out an hour of your birthday today.
I hope you have a tantric sexual birthday and report to all of your listeners.
Oh, well, I may not report to all.
Okay.
I've done a great job of withholding myself today from too much personal information. Brian, thank you, Ava. And Brian, would you remind people about our show next week?
Yes, we're going to have Dr. Jack Morin, who is the author of The Erotic Mind. And he's also going to talk about, in addition to talking about eroticism, we're going to talk about anal sexuality.
Yep. So it's likely to be a really interesting show, provocative, love, lust, and laughter. Thank you all for tuning in or going to the archives and downloading it. We appreciate your attention. Thank you again, Dr. Ava.
Thank you, Diana.
Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.